Hi there, and welcome along to this Monday Racing Postcast. I'm Maddie Plail. This week's guests on the show are Tom Collins, Keith Melrose and Graham Byrne from Paddy Power. This week, coming up, we're going to have a look at Secret Reprieve, the Welsh national winner, and his candidate for the Aintree equivalent. The race also sparked some controversy when Adam Wedge made a comment afterwards. We're also going to have a look at what a fantastic weekend it was for both Paul Nicholls and Daryl Jacob. There was top-class action from Kempton. We're also going to get the lads' thoughts on Saturday's classic chase at Warwick and a festival nap towards the end of the show as well, all coming up in the next 45 minutes or so. Before we get started with the review, though, this is a good opportunity to let you know about our sale for the Members Club Ultimate. If you enter SALE21, all one word, in caps at the checkout, you'll receive your first 2 months for just £10 a month. And the code to enter is SALE21. You can get access to the digital daily newspapers, unlimited race replays, expert tips, all the night before racing, and of course, your horse tracker, of which hopefully we'll provide you with some entries later on in the show. So don't hang around because that offer expires on the 15th of January. Now, let's get into the action then. The big race on Saturday was the Coral Welsh Grand National at Chepstow, and it was won by the very well-backed Secret Reprieve for local combination Evan Williams and Adam Wedge. Now, this is an interesting horse because he's still a novice. The trainer hinted at a possible tilt at the National Hunt Chase next. Where would you go with him, Keith? Because it's not often you get a horse with his sort of profile win a race like this.
No, and I think you go for the Grand National, don't you? It is a bigger race than the 4 miler. The 4 miler, you know, is weight for aid. It's a grade two in there for, there's no handicap condition. Secret Reprieve, one off. I think he was 134 officially on Saturday, maybe with a penalty. His rating's 142. I'm not sure he'd even go up much for winning the Welsh National. You know, that's still a handicapper's mark. I'd be going for the Grand National. He jumps very well. Looks like he travels so well that you think he'd really suit a flat track like Aintree. I'd be going that route.
And what do you think about the prospect of better ground at Aintree? Could he handle that? Because he's not really faced it much in his career.
He's not. He's a big horse as well. I tend not to worry too much about grounds, but I wouldn't be utterly stupefied if it turned out he is a horse that's slightly more effective on softer ground, because he is quite a chasing type on looks.
TC, I mean, Keith's mentioned that he's a very good jumper, but he's not had all that much experience. Would that worry you going into Aintree?
Yeah, I think so. You wouldn't tend to see horses after just 9 runs going to Aintree and winning the National. I think also stamina is probably a slight issue. I know he stayed really well in the Welsh National, but it's downhill. The straight that day, and it's a big step up in trip going to Aintree. Regarding the National Hunt Chase, I mean, looking at the RPRs that horses that have won have achieved in the last 10 years, you have to kind of be a mid-150 horse to win the National Hunt Chase if that's the route they do go down. Now, as Keith said, Secret Reprieve is rated 142 on the official ratings at the moment. So he would have to, you know, improve a fair bit to win the National Hunt Chase. I think that trip's more suitable than the Grand National, though he strikes me as more of a national type. But, you know, he won like a favourite should in the Welsh National, and punters that were backing him into ridiculous low-value odds were rewarded, which is slightly annoying from a punting perspective because you kind of want to see those horses beaten in such a competitive race. I just also want to mention Matt Griffiths' ride on the Two Amigos. I thought it was brilliant. They went hard from the outset. Last year, he got found out when the protagonist quickened from 3 out onwards. This year, he made sure that wasn't going to happen. And he just bumped into a really good one in Secret Reprieve.
I mentioned in a jury piece that we did for the paper that this wasn't like a lot of Welsh Nationals. The ground officially only soft. The times backed that up. And you had to race prominent. I mean, barring the favourite who came from far back, Yala Enkri and the Two Amigos dominated. And those were tactics that you really needed to see in this race. Just a 7-year-old, so he's still relatively inexperienced. What price did you go, Graham, for that Aintree showpiece?
Well, he was introduced to the betting at 25-1. He wasn't previously quoted before that. I thought straight afterwards 25-1 was a bit generous, and it has been knocked into 20-1. So there is a bit of money for him, but the stats are sort of against him for the Grand National. I think you've got to go back to 1940 for the last 7-year-old to win. There's been quite a few 7-year-olds sort of fancied since then, but it's a terrible race stats-wise for 7-year-olds. 20-1 for Secret Reprieve. In grey hands, of course, the Rooker family have had some grey horses placed in this race. They'll know what it takes. And, of course, Evan Williams as well. He'll know how to campaign it. I'm sure he will do the right thing. But stats-wise, seven-year-olds have won 3 of the last 6 National Hunt chases at Cheltenham. Terrible record in the Grand National. I think they're sort of leaning towards the National Hunt chase, myself personally.
He does he does strike very much as a sort of horse that Paul Maloney would have hunted at the 4th in a Grand National, doesn't he?
He's racing around like that. They certainly know how to get placed in those silks. It'd be great to see them very, very popular winners if they did manage to win this.
Alvarado, he was another one, wasn't he? He just kept plodding around. Now, Evan Williams, he was in tears after the race. Local trainer, he said he spoke eloquently about how he never expected he'd be in a position to win it. It clearly meant the absolute world to both him and Adam Wedge, who had had 2 crunching falls beforehand. But afterwards, Wedge, he caused a bit of a stir by saying in his interview to ITV Racing's Luke Harvey, it's a man's game. Now, do we think this was just a throwaway, unfortunate comment, just a slip of the tongue, or was there something else involved here, Keith? Because it's not great when this is being broadcast out on ITV, you know, to people who are prospectively wanting to get into racing or people who aren't necessarily avid followers of the game. It doesn't reflect well, does it?
It's one of these things. It's an inelegant phrasing. I don't think Wedge probably meant anything by it. You know, I'm only 34 myself and can remember that being said on football pitches when I was a kid without any eyebrows being raised. You know, it's that sort of thing. But it is in where we are now, especially with racing, because we do have a sort of male-female parity and maybe get onto sort of that thing later. It is a particularly delicate ground. It's an unfortunate thing that Wedge probably came out with the one throwaway comment that he shouldn't have, but I wouldn't be getting tore into him for it.
You know, they have adrenaline rising after winning a big race, arguably one of the biggest wins of his career as well. So we'll have to see how that story develops. Now, another separate story, Bryony Cross, she rode a double on that same Chepstow card, and it's emerged that the BHA are now investigating some of her concerns from the weighing room. Talk of bullying and the likes, which is truly awful. And this is a big story. Again, I'll go back to you, Keith. This is really concerning, isn't it? What does this mean for the wider picture of racing?
This is what you don't want to see. And to see, it was very much a separate thing to Wedge. It's just that the timing of Wedge seeing that inelegant thing comes the day before this all came out. And you really don't want to hear it because, you know, Frost is... I don't know anything of what's going on, and obviously Frost doesn't want to talk about it, and you're quite right to at this moment. I had only ever been aware of, and this is a while ago now, the sort of the faint notion that there was a little bit of, consternation almost, or envy about the fact that she was getting outsized publicity, Frost. Now, maybe strictly speaking that's true, but if your eyes are only just being opened to the disparity between opportunity and ability in horse racing, then welcome to the party, pal. You know, Rishi Prasad got absolute pelters for a similar sort of line of inquiry last month. So I don't think it's just absolutely desperate that this is coming out and that people are acting in such so narrowly on in terms of their own interests. And this is one of the most disheartening stories I've heard in a little while, actually.
And we can only hope that the BHA do, as I'm sure they will, investigate it thoroughly. And I think it takes a lot of bravery as well to step out of that weighing room environment and report something like this. So well done to Bryony for doing so. And hopefully it will get dealt with swiftly. And let's move back on to the racing on track now, though, and talk about Adagio. He beat Gary Moore trained Nassalam in the Coral Juvenile finale hurdle. Grade 1, it was David Pipe's first grade 1 for some time. I really like this horse. I think he's being underestimated. I know the Irish, traditionally, they've got a strong hand in this division. But I think he's being underestimated. What do you think, TC?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he achieved the joint highest racing post rating in the race since 2010. And the only 2 horses that matched the same RPR were Bristol Demai in 2014 and All Mankind not last year. So, you know, the form looks relatively strong and the effort was good. I think he's definitely improved for each outing. Now, the question mark I have looking towards Cheltenham is David Pipe, to me, in my opinion, is a very patchy trainer. Like, he goes through periods where he has numerous winners and then he'll have 2 months where he can't get one on the board. Now, Pipe has got his string in bang on form at the moment, hasn't he? He keeps saddling winners left, right and centre. When you come to March, will that still be the case? I'm not too sure. But the effort from Adagio was really good. He ran down a potentially smart horse in Nassalam, who got first run on him. Although he was keen earlier, jumped a bit left as well. So you can kind of mark up his effort as well. But he wasn't stopping towards the line, Nassalam, and Adagio was just going further clear. As you said, though, the Irish form must be better at this stage, looking towards the triumph. I mean, Adagio's only defeat came behind Gordon Elliott's third string in the market, Duffelcoat, for the triumph. Now, he's got two other horses in there, Quixilicos and Zanahir. The form looks better for both of those. But don't take anything away from Adagio. I think he's a smart horse, and he's interesting for the home challenges come Cheltenham.
I think you'd have to argue he's leading that home challenge now, especially after this Grade 1 success. And it was a considerable jump up, as you say, an RPR of 127 for the Cheltenham win and now 143 for this. He seems a real stayer and he loves soft ground. Do you think, Keith, would he be inconvenienced by better ground?
It's hard to see at this stage, really. I think what you can see about Saturday's performance is that it was one of a horse that's going to ultimately be suited by further than 2 miles. His pedigree is all sort of continental, a bit of German in there. You normally sort of, the rule of thumb is that they tend to suit softer ground, but I'm not making any judgments on that case at the moment. I just know the time on Saturday was quite good. The collateral form of the two pulling right away from Hoogree, who is himself quite a well-fancied type. It just smacks of being well up to scratch. It smacks of being a mid-140s performance. And at this stage, this finale is normally run, we're 2 weeks on from that now, one mid-140s at this part of the season would fully entitle you to be around the 8-1 mark with the triumph. So, yeah, I think the where he is in terms of his form is absolutely bang on. I don't know if we'll see him again before Cheltenham. I quite like to, because we still don't sort of know enough about him. But yeah, I think certainly in terms of the form he's achieved, his price is absolutely fair enough.
I think his hurdling technique's improved as well. Two of the horses at the top of the Triumph market, TC touched on Quixilicos, but we've also got Gordon Elliott, his other horse, Zanahir here, and French Aseel as well. He was really impressive at Leopardstown. How do they feature? They're right at the top, aren't they, Graham?
Yeah, the interesting thing, Adagio in from 14-1 into 8-1, that's clearly the pick of the British horses. But David Pipe, as we touched on, not great form lately. I think that was his first Grade 1 in about 6 years. I think you have to go back to Moonracer to the last time he had Grade 1 success. Zanny here has been the long-time favourite for a long time. Look, bomb-proof, should I say. I thought it would go off really short for the Bournes and Gordon Elliott. It's 5-2 at the moment. The big market move is for this French Aseel. It hasn't even ran a race in the last week, but its price has come into 5-1 because it was sold. Elmery Holden has sold it to the Donnellys and Willie Mullins. That will be going for their big hope for the Donnellys. Obviously very powerful owners these days, and Willie Mullins. French Aseel, the big market mover in the Triumph as well, into 5-1.
I can definitely understand why. I love that French Aseel. Interesting to see how that division develops, especially with what the likes of All Mankind have gone on to do this year.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, Paddy Power going non-runner, no bet. If you're back at the Irish horses, like Zanny here and French Aseel, that's something you should need to bear in mind.
Definitely key. As we mentioned last week, who knows if the Irish horses will indeed turn up at Cheltenham. We can only keep our fingers crossed and go off what we're told at the moment. Over to Kempton now then for one of their features on Saturday. And it was won by Boar and Bill for Ben Jones and Emma Lavelle at 66-1, the Lanzarote hurdle. This was the first 9-year-old to win since 1987. A 12-year-old did win in 1988, but relatively speaking, he was quite an old and exposed horse to win this race. It was competitive, lots of interesting ones in behind. Who do you think's the main one to take out of it, TC?
Well, it's interesting, as you say, he's a very old horse to win the Lanzarote, but the riders to win the Lanzarote are arguably about the same age, because conditional was always seemed to win. And Ben Jones is just another one to add his name to the roll of honour. Although he's not really a conditional, is he? He's a fully fledged professional just with a claim. He's fantastic, Ben Jones. Looking in behind, well, I got very excited about Hunter's Call. I'm sure I wasn't the only one. I did tip him up on Friday, and as he was turning for home, when Aidan Coleman seems to be taking the extra pull, rounding the bend along the inside, I thought Hunter's Call was going to win, and I started standing up, and my girlfriend was looking at me a bit questionably, and I was like, come on, Hunter's Call. But no, he didn't pick up between the last two, and there was a slight mistake at the last as well, which kind of did for his chances, but he was beaten at that point. I would never have had Boar and Bill in the race. I couldn't have found him if you gave me 20 selections. But Hunter's Call is probably the one to take out of it. And Misty Whiskey, obviously, really stayed nicely. The form could be boosted today as we're filming. I think the second last time out behind Misty Whiskey is due to run today at Doncaster. So we'll see how that horse performs.
Graham, I doubt Boreham Bill's a horse that would have entered many of your anti-post markets, but what were your thoughts on this race?
Well, I'm not a trader, but I'd say this is the sort of race the traders dream of when they go to bed at night, a 66 to one shot coming in like that, and absolutely unfancied. I'd read a lot of previews, a lot of stuff about it. It did have sort of good course and distance form if you peel back a couple of layers, but absolutely unfancied at all, and a dream result for the bookies as they were pushing it out to six places. This is the sort of result they dream about. Misty Whiskey was the one I took out of it. I thought that ran really well for Harry Fry running well. The favourite was very disappointing, One True King.
He was, wasn't he? Didn't seem to travel that well and really attack as you'd expect. Now, what a weekend it was for Paul Nicholls, and two of the big victories he had, Master Tommy Tucker and McFabulous, both also happened in Kempton. We're going to talk about those just after this.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
It was a huge priced seven-timer for Paul Nicholls on the weekend on Saturday. He had winners all over the shop, win Canton, Chepstow and Kempton. But let's focus on two of the big ones at Kempton. Let's start off with McFabulous in that rescheduled Rail Keel hurdle. The switch to Kempton from Cheltenham, I think, will have really suited him, Keith, because I'm not sure he's that strong a stayer, but he's got a lot of class, hasn't he?
He certainly does. And yeah, whether it's the stamina issue or, you know, this is a horse that just tanks through his races and might always be better at flatter tracks. I was very impressed by him. You know, that's a high 150s performance, and he's done it on the bit, really. The issue you're going to have with this horse is, if this horse is trained by, you know, Gordon Elliott or Mickey Henderson, somebody that really obsesses about Cheltenham, to try and fit a square peg into a round hole by picking either the Champion Hurdle or the Stairs. We know he doesn't really stay 3 miles, or he didn't in November. And he just does it the way he did things a little bit gradually on Saturday. Don't think he's a two-miler either. Paul Nicholls does what's best for A, the horse, and B, him winning the Trainers' Championship. And he's going to aim him at Aintree instead, which is absolutely the right call. 2.5 miles, a long, straight, flat track is going to be absolutely bang on for McFabulous, and he's going to be a fascinating runner in the Aintree hurdle.
And he started off his career by winning that Grade 2 bumper at Aintree, didn't he, I believe? So we already know it's a track that suits him. How far do you think he could go, TC? I know you're a really, really big fan of him, but he's not the most straightforward, is he?
No, yeah, I'm a big believer in McFabulous. And I just want to say after the race, when I heard Mick Fitzgerald was having a pop at Harry Cobden for the ride, yeah. I thought the ride was really good, you know. Like, I know people are adamant the jockeys should go the shortest route, but that inside was not playing quick. I mean, you wanted to be off that rail for most of the trip. Hunter's Call was against the rail and he ran a nice race. But aside from that, the horses that raced away from the rail were actually better suited. And
you
I
think
thought Harry.
The ground was better further out.
Most definitely. I think the ground was riding slower on the inside. And Harry Cobden didn't panic early when McFabulous dropped to rear. He made a mistake and then was shuffled back. He gave him plenty of time to refine his rhythm. He got him going, although a little bit wider than ideal. Look, you didn't want to be against the inside, but potentially not six wide, come around the bend. And then he just like coaxed McFabulous home. At some point, you were thinking, right, Harry's going to have to ask McFabulous here because, you know, there's horses alongside and he's not necessarily the strongest stayer and whatnot, although he was dropping back in trip. But he just coaxed him along and he won hard on the snaff. Like, he didn't even come off the bridle. I thought it was a really good ride. And yes, he's got a huge engine. I'm a big believer in the horse. I think he stays 3 miles as well. I don't think he doesn't stay 3 miles anyway. Maybe not as strong as Time Hill and Paisley Park and the like. I wouldn't be surprised if they step back up and trip before long. But Aintree will be interesting if they go there.
They did also mention the 3 mile stayers hurdle at Aintree for him. So it might not just be the 2.5 of the Aintree hurdle that they're looking at.
Well, Paul Nicholls has mentioned Calco Star is the race for him next year. So obviously there is an intention to go back to 3 miles at some point.
Yeah, I think they want to do that when they go over fences. And by the look of him, you'd certainly think he'd make a chaser. But he isn't totally flawless at some of his obstacles, as TC said. Now, the Harry Cobden and Paul Nicholls team, as I've mentioned, had a great time of things, including one of our favourites to talk about on this podcast, Master Tommy Tucker, winning the Silvagnaco Conti Chase. The early departure of Imperial Aura was crucial, and this horse typically gave us all a gasp at the last fence. But again, when he's right, he's very, very good. He is quite old now, though, because he's not had too much racing. He's had some injuries. He's a 10-year-old. Master Tommy Tucker, what would you do with him now, Keith? Because he's not totally straightforward, but he's very good.
What would I do with him? Dear me. What do you do with a horse like this? I didn't watch this race. I don't know what I'd do. Because I didn't watch this race live. I watched it on a replay. So I knew Imperial Honor had went early, and I knew Master Tommy Tucker made a hash of the last. So I'm watching him go around thinking, oh, this is perfect for Master Tommy Tucker, this. No wonder he's put up such a big performance. Small field, getting his own way in front. This is absolutely made for this horse. And I thought that all the way round, and he wears the last. And it doesn't even look like stopping him. I thought it was really quite... This horse is clearly extremely good. But I have absolutely no way of telling whether he'll be up to doing it next time. You know, he was never really in it in the big handicap he ran in. And his performance either side of the December Gold Cup both suggest he should have been well up to being more competitive than he was in that sort of race. He could be another that just suits a flatter track better. God, I think this is the sort of horse that I would definitely defer to a horseman in terms of where you take him next, because I can't quite get to the bottom. I think there's something in this horse's head, and I'm not always the best with horses' heads. So I would happily listen to what Nichols and Cobden say about where you take him, but dear me, this horse has got so much ability, but I couldn't trust him to show it on a given day.
It's funny, isn't it, Harry Cobden afterwards calling him a silly, silly boy. I found it quite entertaining, but you're right. They know exactly how to deal with him. I'd agree with you. I think maybe keep him to the flatter tracks, the likes of Kempton, and they've got the King George on their radar for next year. Would you be interested in him for that, TC?
I'd be avoiding Cheltenham. I mean, that effort back in December when he was never really sighted, that was his clear worst effort. I don't think that track will suit him at all. And he just has a huge engine, doesn't he? Because when I thought Riders on the Storm, when he closed up, come around the bend, that he was going to play a hand in the finish. But as soon as Master Tommy Tucker felt the presence of Riders on the Storm on his quarters on the inside, he just went clear, and Harry just let out a little bit more rein, and he has a huge engine again, much like McFabulous. And that last fence, God, those people who backed him would have had a heart in a mouse, wouldn't they?
Would you be averse to sending him to something like the Melling Chase, potentially? Because he's fast enough.
Oh, yeah, definitely fast enough, isn't he? I mean, that could be the perfect... you know what? I didn't even think about future targets about Master Tommy Tucker, because this horse is not seen that often. I know this season he's had a few runs. And he just seems the type that needs to have everything go his way. I think if he dominates races, he's virtually unbeatable, providing he jumps around. In the Melling Chase, that could be a very interesting spot.
He's fascinating, isn't he? Because he goes out in front and you think this is a fast horse, but ultimately he's not that fast and he keeps going. What of Imperial Aura then? Uncharacteristic mistake from him. He unseated David Bass. Thankfully, they were both okay afterwards. That's got to put you off for a horse at the top of the Cheltenham Festival market, hasn't it, Graham?
Yeah, absolutely. Master Tommy Tucker was 33-1 beforehand, and that's been put into 20-1. But you're a braver man than me if you take him on at the Ryanair with the way he jumps. Obviously, Imperial Aura was 5-1 before the race, but that is now out to 6-1 after, as you say, an uncharacteristic jumping error. Kim Bailey was very puzzled by that.
Puzzling indeed. I mean, Keith, I'm a big Imperial Aura fan. I think you like him as well, but that's got to put some doubt there, hasn't it? I wonder if he'll have another run. Do you think he needs one?
I think they might want to get one into him. It'll be very interesting if they don't. Now, there's a man on this podcast that I know has a system about horses that fell. I don't know if it applies to unseats the time before. And I'd be interested to hear his thoughts on it. I think sometimes you get a little bit of value about those horses, especially as with Imperial Honor. He just made a pig's ear of the second fence. You know, that's, yes, it's not great, but it's not necessarily something that would be massively putting me off. And I get the impression that these sort of horses, if he does go into the Ryanair off the back of that, you're going to get bigger than 6-1 about him, or the equivalent of 6-1 at some point in the approach to the Ryanair. So I'm not as put off as I might be, and I'll be waiting and just maybe try to take that chance when I see it coming up nearer the time.
Shaping up to be a fantastic race, isn't it, the Ryanair? It's often, you know, with the Gold Cup there and the Champion Chase, the Ryanair, you think, oh, is it the most competitive? But with the likes of Min, Mellon, St. Calvados again from last year, and so many more, this horse among them, it could be a real cracker. TC, do you agree with Keith?
I think the main point here is that going right-handed isn't as preferable for Imperial Aura as going left-handed. Like, he was jumping out to his left at Ascot on the previous start when he beat Itchy Feet. He kind of made a meal of that race in the 1965 chase as well. I thought the race was kind of there for the taking with Itchy Feet's poor jumping and whatnot, but he jumped out to the left. He looked a bit clueless at his fences. And then again, he made an uncharacteristic mistake at Kempton. Now, as Keith mentioned, I don't like horses that fell last time out. I don't necessarily class horses unseated in the same category, because I just feel that Imperial Aura actually, you know, if the jockey could have stayed in the saddle, the mistake, he might have just gone through with that mistake and still posed a challenge to Master Tommy Tucker at the end. If a horse falls, it really knocks their confidence. And, you know, I really want to see horses that fall come out again before a big race. I'm willing to leave Imperial Aura as a maybe on the jumping scale right now. I want to see him go back left-handed as well. I think at a better price, now obviously he's drifted in the market for Cheltenham, he's probably worth a play, because he's got plenty of ability, and we saw what he could do at Cheltenham last year when he won the Northern Trust. I wouldn't be giving up on him just yet.
I think he'll go for price at Cheltenham, you know. But I do agree with what TC says about going left-handed. I think he does jump better that way, but I've got a real feeling this horse is going to get bigger.
I'll take that. I like him, definitely. I'm not saying he can win the Ryanair, but I've always been a huge fan, and bigger price, especially if they get a run into him beforehand. That's good news to me. Another person who had a fantastic day on Saturday was Daryl Jacob. He had a five-timer at Wincanton, a jockey really riding at the top of his game at the minute. And Masir de Zobo starred in the Dipper. Now, this is a horse who, Challow winner, I think, back a couple of years ago, has had his issues, but appears to love the jumping game. Do you think he could feature at Cheltenham, Keith?
It's still quite hard to say. I mean, he's jumped very well on two runs round Wincanton so far. Wincanton does test their jumping, so you're really not worried about that so much. You know, he obviously can. He's taken the fences. His most famous sibling is Bouvroy, who improved a stone for moving the fences. And obviously, the Sierra Zobo's got about a three-year gap to overcome in between. But it still does suggest that he has got that pedigree behind him, as well as the aptitude he's shown for fences. Just to mention about Jacob, we're talking about Harry Cobden's ride on McFabulous. Jacob came wide on at least two of his chase winners up the straight at Wincanton. So, you know, this switching for better ground thing is something that jockeys do all the time. And actually, it sometimes frustrates me when they do it, when they're surrendering that ground. But Jacob clearly saw something, I think, that others didn't necessarily, because he certainly, Monsieur de Zobo brought him right to the near side all the way up the straight. I was disappointed with Protectorate. I assumed, first time I watched the race, that it had been a steady pace and that he'd been done for speed. I do think Protected That as a stayer in the long run, and I thought that before Saturday. I did, so because I had that doubt in my mind, I went back and did a little section on it, and the actual time, it wasn't a sprint finish. They finished at about 98%, which at Wincanton, you know, I imagine isn't that quick. And it compares, the time compares with Capeland, who won the very next race for Jacob. Quite equally, Capeland won off 149. and I think the time by Monsieur de Zobo was that little bit quicker overall, and that little bit quicker from three out, but he carried £11 less. So you've got a bit of a handle on potentially the worth of that form. It is a sort of low 150s type of performance, and you will need to improve on that to be competitive in the Marsh before you even consider who turns up against him. You know, we talk about Envoy Allen turning up for that race, but generally to win it, you're looking at 160 anyway, and you'll need to step up.
Okay. Now, Nace was abandoned on Sunday due to the frozen ground. Now, that card's going to be rescheduled on Wednesday, including the Lawlers of Nace novice hurdler. A fantastic race. You mentioned Envoy Allen. He won it just last year. You've got some market reports for us, Graham.
Yeah, it's a big race that's been put forward until Wednesday. Thankfully, it's gone forward. There's really good field going to post for this, which could have serious ramifications for the Ballymore market. Bob Ollinger for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore is in there. Blue Lord for Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. And then we have a couple of Jessica Harrington runners, Ashdale Bob, who was a good grade two winner last time out, and Cross Hill, who's trying to get its reputation back together. So we're looking for some early market moves for the Ballymore. Bob Ollinger is 8-1 at the moment, and Blue Lord is 16-1 for that one. So we'll have to see how that market shapes up.
It's definitely going to have an impact, isn't it? Great to see those good horses taking each other on now. So with the Irish racing abandoned, it was over to Exeter on Sunday for the jumps action. Bear Gills, he was one of the standout horses there. It's interesting that he's probably going to go to the Ballymore now off the back of a handicap, and his jumping wasn't flawless either, but he extended his unbeaten run. TC, can you imagine him featuring in a race like the Ballymore? He's a bit left field, isn't he?
Yeah, no, in short, I don't think he would feature among the protagonists in the Ballymore. Look, he's 4 from 4. You can't really take much away from him. Nicky Martin's done a great job with the training performance so far of Bear Gills, and Matt Griffiths again was spot on with the ride. His jumping, though, is, in Nicky Martin's words, the trainer Nicky Martin's words, appalling. He doesn't touch a twig at home, but as soon as he gets on the racetrack, he just plows through every hurdle. And if you're doing that at Cheltenham in a race such as the Ballymore, you're going to get found out. Now, he's only running novice events. This was a handicap. He beat a horse called Stormy Flight by 5 lengths. That horse is rated 1, 2, 3. He's going to have to step up dramatically to feature at Cheltenham if they do go that route. I presume they are going to go to the Ballymore. More work on the jumping, although it doesn't seem to help on the track. If you're working him at home over the jumping and he's not touching the twig, how are you supposed to expect him to improve on the track when he's just time after time again just ploughing through every hurdle?
It's a valid question. I actually thought at times he was very fluent and he was quite quick, but at other times he just didn't respect them at all. And they've mentioned fences in future, and you'd think he'd respect them a lot more. Now, the Ballymore Market is a race that we're continually learning about, as you'd expect at this time of year, Graham. But Bear Gills, I thought he was about 12-1. I thought that was quite a short price.
Yeah, he was slashed. He was 25-1 before the race. I mean, it's an exciting prospect for Nicky Martin. Who had a great weekend, but it's a tough race, isn't it? Brave Man's Game is the favourite at 7-2. Paul Nichols compared it to Denman. Harry Cobden says it's his best ride of the meeting. That's why it's so popular. But Willie Mullins has a couple after that. Appreciated. Had a great win at Leopardstown. Very impressive. That's next in the betting at 4-1. And of course, we are going non-runner money back, of course. So take this involved with the Irish horses. Guyard the Main Ill is Willie's other one in this one. It was very impressive winning a maiden hurdle at Leopardstown over the festive period. Then we have Metier at 10-1. Was impressive in the Tolworth, unbeaten after the wind surgery. And Bob Ollinger, who's running at Nature in the week. That's an 8-1 shot.
I like that second Willie Mullins horse you mentioned, who won at Leopardstown. I'll be keeping my eye on him. Also talking of Paul Nichols just before there, Flemingstide, he had winning the bumper. That was impressive. Keith, you have some eye catchers from another race on the card.
I do indeed, yeah. I've watched the two Chasers Exeter. That's where I've sort of focused my attentions. And it was sort of nice to see Frankie de Berli. I didn't back him, but it was nice to see Frankie de Berli get his reward for quite a lot of decent efforts this season. He sort of was on my radar a little bit after his second on reappearance, but I didn't sort of quite do it until yesterday. The two placed horses in that race I thought were worth flagging up. Brian Storm was having his first run in about 2 years. And I think the price tells you he was thought fit, but he was still very fresh, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was a bit more to be wrung out of him next time. And the Milos in third was another one who was coming from a bit of a break off and was never involved in the race, but certainly showed enough to think that with a bit of more chasing experience behind him, he could very much enjoy in this company near at hand. And just also watch out for that 3 mile race. I think they went a little bit hard. Crossley Tender and Samuel Jackson were out the back early on before coming through to finish first and second. Samuel Jackson finished from out of nowhere, but it's horses from that instance like Tea Time on Mars and even Ballycross, who's moved to Nicky Henderson now and was never really in the hunt, but showed there was certainly a lot there to play with. So look out for Tea Time on Mars going back down in grade, and Ballycross in whatever race he turns up in. Is the rider's Billy Abrahamian, is he still qualified for these military races?
I think he might be. I know he's assistant to Nicky Henderson now.
Oh,
isn't
he now? Yes, he is. He did used to ride in those military races, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. That could be an option.
I wonder if that's why he's moved to Henderson, this horse, to maybe win one of the Grand Military Gold Cup or whatever.
He's running one already, you know. Maybe he has.
Oh, maybe he has.
We'll check up on that theory. In the meantime, I want to get two horses from each of you. Keith, you've already gone through an eye catcher for the weekend, but I also want to get a Cheltenham Festival Antipost bet that you're really keen on. Who do you want to nominate?
For myself?
Yes.
I've not got anything particularly inspiring at the moment, but I tell you what, I, Paddy Power, are going non-runner, no bet on Cheltenham races. And with that being on offer, Politolog each way in the Champion Chase is a bit of a... is a really sensible bet. It's not particularly inspiring, but it is ultra, ultra sensible. I can't see him being out of the frame. There's nothing else that's really coming through in that division, and he's 5-1. And Chacun Pursois, while we probably beat him on the evidence we've seen so far, has a lot more to answer than Politolog. And I just think that's, you know, it's a real, really obvious investment.
Okay, TC, an eye catcher and a Cheltenham Festival anti-post bet from you, please.
Yeah, two eye catchers. The first one, I don't know if you can actually describe him as an eye catcher, but a horse that I'm willing to forgive once again, probably at my own peril, which is Slate House. I just thought he travelled into this Wincanton race really well and an eye catching. I thought he was going to win, although he was making so many mistakes through the early part of the race. He was losing momentum and he just wasn't jumping with any fluency. And then when he came to challenge, he just put his head to one side, looked to be running up and down the spot, looked a pretty tricky ride. And given he actually stays a lot further than the 2.5 mile trip, it was a bit of a disappointing finishing effort. Now, he's had 3 wind ops in the past. To me, it looked like he couldn't breathe still. So I would like to see what happens with Slate House. And another eye catcher is Album. Now, this for flat horse racing fans, ran at Chelmsford. I really like this Album. I think he's a potential massive improver on the all-weather this winter. He's won his last 2 starts for Stuart Williams, who, as we know, is very shrewd. He was running off a mark of 68, and he was sent off the odds-on favourite, so he was expected to win under a £5 penalty for his Wolverhampton success. If you watch the Wolverhampton success on January the 4th, his finishing effort, now I haven't looked at the sectionals, I probably should have before I say this, but his finishing effort was unbelievably strong. Stuart Williams has his team in great form, 37% in the last 2 weeks. But this Album is well above his mark. His RPRs are 78 and 75 in the last week in those 2 runs, far above his official rating of 68. I would be keeping Album on side. And then looking towards Cheltenham, everyone knows I love the boss's Oscar for the Potemp, so I won't ramble on about him again. I think he's a banker of the meeting if he turns up in the race, all being well. But one as a dark horse that we haven't seen yet this year, who is entered in the market, is Eric Bloodaxe in the Martin Pipe. Now, he's a pretty forgotten horse. Like, no one in any of these podcasts that I've heard, potentially I might have missed one, has mentioned this Eric Bloodaxe. He's only had 3 runs for Joseph O'Brien. He's a 5-year-old owned by Jigginstown. And, you know, Joseph's a plotter as a trainer, I feel. And this horse has only run in bumpers. He won the first 2 really well, beating wide receiver in the second one, beating Fernie Hollow in the first event at Ferry House. Like, the form is good. Last time at Leopardstown in Grade 2, he was miles behind Appreciate It. But he was lame. He was pulled up lame that day. Now, he's 25s for the Martin Pipe. We need to see him come out over hurdles, see if he jumps, see if he retains his ability after the lameness. But he could be a real dark horse going towards Cheltenham.
I like that. That's a really sneaky one from TC there. Graham, what about yourself?
Well, the horse that caught my eye over the weekend, I think, was Misty Whiskey. I thought it ran a great race in the Lanzarote. I'd be interested to see what Harry Fry does with that next. But looking forward to Cheltenham, I'm going to go with French Assile with this non-runner money back in the Triumph hurdle. If your customers, if the people listening to this podcast haven't seen what it did at Leopardstown over Christmas, have another look at that race. It was so impressive. Willie Mullins and the Donnellys, they've got the checkbook out. They've signed this one into the yard now. I think it's going to go off with a great chance in the Triumph Hurdle.
Fantastic. Good action this weekend at Warwick, the classic chase of the feature. Great long distance handicap. We'll get the lads' thoughts on that just after this.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
So at the top of the show, we talked about the Welsh National, the Grand National. Now, another race that could be key when assessing that future target is the McCoy Contractor Civil Engineering Classic Handicap Chase, the 3:00 at Warwick on Saturday. We've just got the entries trickling through now. This Grade 3 contest, no betting just yet, Graham, but who do you anticipate will be near the top of the market?
Well, this is really wide open. You have the looks like Bally Optic, Django Django, and it's going to be a really interesting race. And as you said, they're just trickling through the declarations now. So I think they'll have their work cut out. There's 22 of them declared for this one. So it'll be interesting to see where the market is for this one. But I see this one being very wide open.
Okay. And Keith, you have a horse who you fancy for this. Tell us who it is and why.
Sort of. I mean, it's a lot. Looking at the makeup of the race, a lot of it's going to depend on Bally Optic, who's the highest rated by a long way. He's rated 160, and if he runs, you know, I think it moves, if he doesn't, it moves the weights up about a stone. That's potentially significant for a financial outcome, who's down near the bottom for Rebecca Curtis. But the one I actually fancy in the race, because it doesn't look like a race with lots of improvers in it to me, is Storm Control, who's obviously had such a tremendous winter so far. He's shown that he does stay very well with those two wins at Cheltenham in November and December. And he has the style of going about things. You know, he acts in soft ground very well as well, of the sort of horse that's going to really love it round going round Warwick. I thought he was actually one for flat tracks early in his career as well. So I think he's really going to suit Warwick. Now that he's shown he stays 3 mile two, all you have to do is take that little extra step to think he'll stay 3 mile five. In a race that I'm not looking at anything and going, oh, I'm scared of that and I'm scared of that, Storm Control looks like a really solid sort of option to me.
I was interested to see that the veteran Western Climate, he's still in there, right down the bottom of 1-2-2. Not saying he's going to win, but he's certainly...
He's another one that he'll be miles out the weights if Ballyoptic runs. So there's a couple that are sort of rated mid-120s or lower that are going to be miles out if Ballyoptic runs, but actually potentially in the weights if he doesn't. So that's something we need to maybe... Ballyoptic's going to be a key horse there, whether you fancy him or not.
Definitely off 160 for Nigel Tristan Davis. Also, this card has been pretty good in recent years for Cheltenham. Otherwise, we've got the Ballymore Leamington, obviously, hurdle. It was won by Willoughby Court, I think, a couple of years back now. He went on to win the Ballymore. Lots of horses engaged there that are interesting. But you're a big fan of the Novice Chase, Keith, and this is going to be interesting too. The Hampton Novice Chase.
The Hampton Court always as well. Don't worry, that's the same mistake I make. This is one of the few upgraded races in recent years that I'm absolutely on board with. It does actually produce a lot of good horses these days, and it's the next instalment in the Next Destination story. I think he's nine, so because he had that time off the track, but he's come back for Paul Nicholls, looking like he's going to deliver and become the chaser. He looked like becoming, even in his novice hurdle days in Ireland, he was a notably good jumper. And he's now moved to Paul Nicholls, who's obviously particularly good at getting these horses to convert into good chasers, albeit with an 18-month, two-and-a-half-year gap in between. He's a really interesting horse to run in this Hampton Novices Chase, and I'll be fascinated to see him.
Indeed, and also I think this is a race to keep an eye on with regards to handicaps. The likes of Dickie Diver, I mean, his chasing debut last time out, he's been very lightly raced. You've got Evan Williams as Fado de Brosses. Fullback is a horse I'm a huge fan of as a staying chaser, but not necessarily sure he'll be up to this level. So I'll also be looking at those in behind. And Graham, you like Fiddler on the Roof to get back to the winner's enclosure.
Yeah, I think it needs to. It's been second a couple of last times, running into a Caribbean Boy in a good race. I think they really like this one. I know there's been a lot of stable confidence behind it in the past. And I think they were sort of aiming it towards the Marsh Novice Chase over at entry, or at Cheltenham, of course. So this one, to me, it's got to win if it's going to go to Cheltenham. So I'll be keeping an eye on Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay, and TC, you're going off-piste as per usual. You want to go to Kempton for your Saturday bets. Who is it?
Yeah, going away from the norm yet. Haven't looked at Warwick's card in depth yet, so don't want to put one forward. So we'll go to Kempton for a banker. I'm going to give you a banker, as long as you don't mind taking a reasonably short price on Broughton Sunpearl in the 720, a 7 furlong 0-70 handicap. Trained by Tom Clover, this 4-year-old. Broughton Sunpearl absolutely bolted up last time over this course and distance. Won by two and a half lengths under Laura Pearson, who must be the most fashionable jockey going around in Britain at the moment. She's been fantastic on the all-weather. She's 2-for-7 for Tom Clover for a level stakes profit of £2.25. This Broughton Sunpearl's miles ahead of the mark and will win the 7.20 at Kempton on Saturday.
That's what we like to see. We don't care which track it's at, but confidence, a banker and a nap. I'm sure that'll be appearing in the punt on Saturday if the horse does indeed run. Now, that's all we've got time for on today's show. Bruce and the team will be back on Friday to have a look at those cards as per usual, so make sure you tune in then. And until next time, we'll see you soon.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online. And we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.